for great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. Thanks for listening and being a part of the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Now, as I mentioned, we're talking digital ID bill with George Christensen on the program tomorrow. And I should make the point that courtesy of Cash Welcome, which is a group that is fighting tooth and nail to support the flow of cash in the Australian society and not go down the track of the big banks and stop us having access to cash, they have come up with this. And I thought this was rather interesting and something that you may wish to know. And I've just lost it. It just disappeared off the screen. Here it is again. Supermarket giant Coles is limiting cash out to $200 now, hoarding its own cash reserves and telling staff to direct customers to use card and phone payments over the Easter long weekend. Now, this sounds to me like as if they are jumping on that same digital central bank cash campaign. Coles is concerned that its cash could be trapped in armoured trucks owned by Armaguard, which may declare bankruptcy as soon as Wednesday next week. So this is what they've used as their excuse. Oh, Armaguard might go bust. And so therefore all the cash is trapped in the vans. So we've got to tell our customers not to use cash. I don't believe that as much as I could throw an Armaguard van. The big banks have reportedly offered Armaguard just $26 million extra funding to keep their trucks on the road and delivering cash until October. And see, this goes back to the crux of the problem. The reason that Armaguard has its problems is because the big banks are doing all they can to make it more difficult for you to access your own cash. They want to control your wealth, your money, your savings, your day-to-day accounts. And then what happens if someone turns off the power one day or decides to turn off the internet, shoot down the satellite because they want to stuff up Australia for some conflict that's going on in the Indo-Pacific? Now, you might say, that won't happen. Really? You really think that that is not part of our future at some stage? So what happens? We then no longer have access to petrol because we have no card that works. We don't have internet. But if we had cash, we could get about in an emergency like that. There's so many reasons as to why cash needs to be part of our tenure. And it needs to be part of everything that we do in life. And the move by the big bank should be repelled, protested, and campaigned against. Crunch time for the cash system is now, says Cash Welcome. Australia could effectively become almost a completely cashless society as soon as next Wednesday if Armaguard collapses. And we know why Armaguard is collapsing. It's primarily because the big banks have decided we'll starve the Armaguard vans, we'll make sure they aren't getting the revenue that they deserve because of the service they provide, and you watch, there'll be no need for cash. So the Coleses of the world and the Woolworths of the world will start telling customers, no cash, thanks. And they get their wish. Because you think about how many Australians shop at these places. Just very quickly, I've been telling you about this fellow that was thrown into the New South Wales Police Commissioner's media unit as their boss recently because of the departure of Liz Deegan. That particular person was television producer Steve Jackson. Well, I kind of mentioned this last week on the program, and I suggested that this was thrown on top of the police commissioner and was given, and he was given to the police commissioner by the police minister. New South Wales Police has torn up the contract, appointing television producer Steve Jackson as the new chief of their media unit following a fortnight of criticism. Jackson, a veteran journalist, was announced as the new head of the powerful New South Wales Police media unit after Police Commissioner Karen Webb dismissed her top media advisor, Liz Deegan. Public gaffes by Webb had compounded the horrors, and it goes on and talks about why Deegan has gone. Last week, the Herald had revealed that Jackson, who worked at Seven's investigative series Spotlight, was recommended for the role by his friend Ross Nielsen, who was the chief of staff to New South Wales Police Minister Yasmin Hatley. Sources within New South Wales Police, not authorised to speak publicly, were blindsided when an offer was extended to Jackson without the role being advertised. Now, I know Ross Nielsen. I've known him for many, many years. He's a fairly straight shooter. But even Ross would know that if you're not advertising for jobs like this, you're going to get into deep car down the track. Tensions grew last week between the officers of Catley and New South Wales Police Commissioner Karen Webb, culminating in claims police staff had been excluded from the minister's office in the New South Wales Parliament. Apparently, I can tell you that there were a few skeletons in the Jackson cupboard. That's all I'm willing to say. A few skeletons in the Jackson cupboard that didn't seem appropriate for someone who would be in charge of the media unit at the New South Wales Police Commissioner's office. So there you go. That's all I can say. This is Chris Smith on TNT.
Delivering the facts.
Source I can trust.
Today's News Talk Radio. TNT.
Well, whistleblowers are far more vital than ever to expose corrupt governments and corporations, because we know that more and more they are getting very adept at hiding their conspiracies and their corruption. As news in recent days shows, whistleblowers Julian Assange and David McBride are under attack. Two classic examples. While this week's High Court decision for Julian Assange was not all bad, he still remains in jail. And on Monday, ABC's Four Corners ran the Rules of Engagement feature on David McBride, which he's described as a hit piece, an attempted smear of his parenting. If this is how the ABC treats whistleblowers, why should anyone go to the ABC in future? You just wouldn't, would you? Because they'll turn on you. My next guest will give some important insights into this. Jeff Morris, OAM, studied economics and law at the University of Sydney and is a certified financial planner. He's had nearly 30 years' experience working in financial services. In 2008, he joined Commonwealth Financial Planning and rapidly became concerned about the severe losses and emotional distress being suffered by many elderly and vulnerable clients due to the poor advice they were receiving. He became a whistleblower to the Australian corporate regulator, ASIC. He joins us live from Sydney. Jeff Morris, welcome to TNT.
Pleasure, Chris. Good to be here.
I want to talk about Four Corners, seeing that it's all fresh in our minds. Do you think the ABC's Four Corners feature on David this week was intended as a hit job?
Well, I don't know. They actually interviewed me for that story, and then I think there was some footage of me getting out of a car, and that was all I noticed.
Say what they were looking for, obviously.
Well, I mean, that's the other interpretation, because some of the things that they ran, comments by Dan Oakes and Chris Masters, I'd specifically refuted in my conversation with them. And it's really those comments that are the hit job. And they've been going around for a while. And I really don't understand this, because David gave Dan Oakes all the secret documents that he had, all of them. And based on those documents, Dan Oakes wrote the Afghan file story, for which I couldn't believe he won a Walkley.
Yeah.
And he was given an OAM. Mm. And yet Dan Oakes is running this narrative that it wasn't the story that David McBride wanted. Well, if that was true, if he didn't want Dan Oakes to write about the war crimes, the actual direct war crimes that were committed, why did he give him those documents?
Exactly.
I mean, it's absurd. And and Chris Masters' criticism of David McBride is even more outrageous. You just got to wonder, what is the motivation of these people? And on top of that, I think it's important to note also, you made a good point before, why would a whistleblower trust the ABC? Well, it was the ABC that actually exposed David McBride to this prosecution, because the documents that David McBride gave them were logged into their computer system. Now, a number of journalists have said to me, nobody worth their salt would have done that. No. You keep those documents in your private possession. So the ABC...
You find a safe somewhere, maybe a safe under your bed at home, and you leave them there.
Well, or a shoebox in your garage, whatever. So they've dropped David McBride right in it, and the ABC is responsible for this. And maybe they ought to come out and acknowledge that. But the other curious thing I said before, Dan Oakes was given an OAM for that story based on these secret documents that he was given by David McBride, for which David McBride is likely to go to prison for a custodial sentence.
Mm.
So on the one hand, we imprison the whistleblower who gave these documents to the journalist, and then we give the journalist who wrote about these secret documents, we give him a medal. Look, the government ought to at least be consistent, even if they can't be ethical. They could
it's interesting. It's very similar to, and I'm just trying to find an analogy. It's like going to the police and saying, hey, listen, my son is in a little bit of trouble and I know where it's coming from and I know he's been bullied about it and he's got something to do with it with a gang of people. Can you please help him? He'll tell you everything you need. Mm. And then the police turn around and charge the bastard. You know, it's just exactly the same.
Well, it is. And look, the journalists also in this case, I think, have something to answer because they took the soft option in going after the ones that David McBride himself refers to as the corporals, the ones who actually committed the war crimes. And I agree with Dave. The far more important people to go after and hold to account are the generals who knew about this and covered it up. And that was that's why David is at daggers drawn with these journalists, because they ducked out of the more difficult story, the one that would have upset people with some influence. They took the low-hanging fruit and went after the grunts. So, which I think is a disgrace. And look, I have a saying as a whistleblower. Whistleblowers develop a lexicon all of their own, but I always say the cover-up is always worse than the crime.
Yeah.
Because the cover-up, what was the same in the banking industry, and any other whistleblower will tell you this, the cover-up is perpetrated by the hierarchy.
Mm.
So I used to compare the banks to a crime syndicate because at the top were the crime bosses who never got touched. At the bottom were the low-level financial planners who were ripping off the widows and orphans, and they were the people that ASIC would go after. They wouldn't go after the men who were responsible for it and able to cover it up. It's exactly the same with David's case, and it's interesting. They certainly have some powerful protectors, these generals, because the federal government has swallowed their story hook, line, and sinker, probably implicated in it themselves, to be frank. And so they're going after David McBride to bury this terrible secret that our generals knew about the war crimes, covered them up.
Yeah, and that is the story. Now, the ABC couldn't see the story or thought it was too hard to obtain, so they took the lazy route. But more than that, and this is not a comment that you are expert at, but just in terms of journalism, you know, I learnt a long time ago that you treat your sources like gold. If people are prepared to put their lives on the line in some instances and tell you things that they wouldn't normally tell other people, which then, you know, enables you to put something to air that changes society, that makes it better, don't you then look after the person no matter what their foibles, no matter what the accusations made against them, don't you look after those people so that you can tell the next potential source that you've got their back?
Well, exactly. And I was very lucky in my experience in that I found the right journalist to work with. And Adele Ferguson went out of her way at every stage to protect me and you need that. And I had a senator I was working with as well, John Wacker Williams. And you need that because the smear campaigns that are launched against whistleblowers by institutions are just appalling.
Yeah, well, in terms of those two journalists that have turned on David McBride the way they did and, you know, created what was a hit job on Monday night, you wouldn't want to be in the trenches with them, would you?
No, they're not the sort of blokes you want in the foxhole with you. That's absolute. Whereas, on the other hand, David McBride is exactly the sort of bloke you want in the foxhole with you when things get real.
Yeah. I want to talk about Julian Assange now. Are you hopeful that the United States will drop the charges against Julian Assange now that this period of the case is concluded? And yet again, it's really not concluded. They've given the United States 3 weeks to return their answers. And I guess that's at the point when the United States might start doing a deal if they've got a predilection to do so.
Yeah, look, I don't hold out much hope of the British government growing a spine in the next 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fact is, the court may be different. I think the court have taken a very reasonable approach in what they've ruled. But I suspect the Americans will give those assurances about the death penalty, and that Julian will be on a plane. But not to worry, Chris, the slimy backroom deal has already been done. Julian will be shipped off to the states. He'll be tried, he'll be convicted, and I'm sure the Albanese government is absolutely complicit in this. Then a deal will be done where he'll be released for a token prison sentence, not much more than time already served. Because if he pleads guilty, if he accepts it, they will give credit for this time that he spent in Belmarsh prison, which is hell on earth. So that's what I see as the likelihood, or another slimy deal where he's allowed to come back to Australia and serve his sentence like David Hicks did. And then, our government, who are too spineless to stand up for an Australian citizen, will stand up and grotesquely take credit for having engineered this outcome. But I have no doubt that deal's already been done, and he's already been sold down the river by our government, and who seem to me to have pretty much surrendered our sovereignty to the United States.
That's disgraceful stuff. Disgraceful.
And I just let me add, Chris, I saw the other night, I went to the premiere of the film The Trust Fall about Julian Assange. It's a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And David McBride was one of the people who was interviewed. And I'd recommend to your listeners that they, if they possibly can, get along to see it, because it tells you the real story about Julian Assange. And the proposition is, what if everything you'd been told about him was a lie? And it is. He's been smeared by very powerful forces.
Just atrocious. I've got to take a break. We'll come back and talk further about this area of whistleblowing in just a second. Jeff Morris is my special guest. We'll do that right after a break on TNT.
TNT's Jason Allbourne.
What that sneaky World Health Organization, that private organization linked to the United Nations, is planning to do to take away yours and my medical sovereignty. Or pretending that they're not going to, of course, because it just so happens that they have got the ability to look into a crystal ball, see around corners, and tell us that there is yet another virus or disease or sickness coming for us, and the only way that we survive it is to do exactly what Tedros tells us to do, even though the man's not even a doctor. Can't even tell his own Ethiopian country on three separate occasions, goodness me, that they have had a cholera outbreak. Cholera characterized by acute watery diarrhea that, if not diagnosed correctly, can result in death. Well, on three occasions, Tedros's answer was, we didn't have good enough testing or testing available, so we didn't really know that it was cholera. That's the guy who's leading the world.
Weekends with Jason Allbourne on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. The Net Zero Con will leave millions of citizens dependent on state handouts. It isn't a theory. It's an agenda. There is no climate emergency. On air 24/7. This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We'll get to Dr. Alan Moran and talk about whether it's at all feasible to create a solar panel manufacturing industry in the Hunter Valley to replace coal-fired stations. We'll talk to Alan shortly. I've got Jeff Morris with me. In 2008, Jeff joined Commonwealth Financial Planning and rapidly became concerned about the severe losses and emotional distress being suffered by many elderly and vulnerable clients due to the poor advice they received. He became a whistleblower to the Australian corporate regulator, ASIC, and we know that there was a Royal Commission afterwards, and the rest is history. You were well known, Jeff, for blowing the whistle on the Commonwealth Bank of Australia. What was the trigger? What was the point in time, one afternoon, one morning, one night, where you said, that's it, my life is about to change forever?
Well, it was when a couple of people came to see me, retirees. They came in. They already had a planner, but they said they didn't trust him. They thought he was a crook. They were in my office for 2.5 hours. They were physically breaking down with their distress. Had to adjourn meeting a couple of times. And the story they told me was absolutely horrific. Their investments had been absolutely bungled, and they'd been put into products which would generate the highest commission or return manner, not what was in their interests. And it was when I went home that night, I was aware, I'd found out that there were actually dozens of people in this situation with the same planner. This was during the GFC, of course. And as Warren Buffett says, the guru of investment managers, he says, well, when the tide goes out, you get to see who's been swimming naked. And that's what happened. A lot of these frauds were exposed. But I found out there were dozens of people who'd been put in this situation. That was just in the immediate area. the people I saw first had lost over $500,000. Other people were racking up massive losses, like their retirement savings were vaporized. But the thing was, the bank was fobbing them off. It was lying to them. And I knew what they'd do, and I knew they'd get away with it unless somebody actually got involved and blew the whistle on the bank and actually not only informed the corporate regulator but forced the corporate regulator to do their job, because, as we all know, they're bloody useless.
Bloody useless. Toothless tigers. I don't know how many times I've written a script where we refer to these bodies like ASIC and we use the word toothless tiger, because they prove time and time again how toothless they are, don't they?
They're utterly incompetent, Chris. It's a disgrace that those people are on the public payroll. And I was once asked by a senator in a Senate inquiry, how do you fix ASIC? And I said, well, you don't. You demolish it and you start again. The culture in that place is so sick. It's like a disease. It needs to be burnt to the ground, sanitized, and start with a new organization.
Yeah.
Words can't describe the extent of their sheer uselessness. And that was actually the cause of all the bank misconduct. The banks only played up because they knew they could get away with it. There was no regulator on the scene. So they were the cause of the whole thing. And they still are. Nothing's changed. ASIC is just as incompetent today as it was 15 years ago.
You campaigned for the Banking Royal Commission. What did it achieve, do you think? Was it a waste of time?
Oh, no, it achieved a lot. I mean, when I started out, as you say, I knew it was going to be a tough road, and I was realistic about what I was likely to achieve. And in fact, I got further than I thought I would at the start. I got a Senate inquiry, I got a parliamentary inquiry that recommended a Royal Commission in 2013-14. And in 2017, we got the Banking Royal Commission. The chairman and the managing directors of the big banks were hauled over the coals at the Royal Commission, and I was there for some of that cross-examination. And frankly, it was just embarrassing. And it points to a bigger problem, well, a corporate-wide problem in terms of the competence of these public company boards. And again, this is like, you know, ordinary people effectively through their super owned shares in BHP and the banks. The caliber of the directors that I saw on the witness box at the Royal Commission was frightening. And it, of course, it explains why they sat there.
What, duplicitous or stupid or both?
Stupid, incompetent, lazy, wow. Disinterested. And they just let the management team do whatever they liked. And I remember seeing one of them being questioned about risk management. And honest to God, they went through the reports of this risk committee of the board of a major company, and month after month, the reports were the same. They just kept getting worse and nothing was done. There were pages and pages of business critical issues that they just weren't dealing with. So I think it did shine a light, and I think the enduring legacy is that the banks, it'll be a long time before they go back to being as bad as they were. In fact, I doubt they'll ever get back to that stage, because things were just bizarre. The sales culture had become a mania, and they'd pretty much lost their minds. So I don't think it'll get that bad again anytime soon.
I want to talk about future whistleblowers and your advice to future whistleblowers. But before I ask you that direct question, I want to read you something that one of our viewers has written on our chat box on tntradio.live a short time ago. It's from Chimp Watch. He or she says, everything you were brought up by your responsible parents about society and accountability is an illusion.
trust no one and never share information to who you think you are friends with in a working environment. This is the problem, isn't it? That you don't know who's complicit in some of this mania, as you put it, but you do know it's wrong. And it's incumbent on people to call it out, isn't it?
Well, it is, but very few people will do that because just about everybody, almost without exception, I mean, just assume everybody is against you, is my advice, but because they are. Everybody is either actively involved in drinking the Kool-Aid, singing from the party song sheet, or they're passively involved in that they're complicit. They know it's wrong, but they're not going to do anything about it.
So the employees, when you did this, the employees didn't rush over to your house and have a chuck a party and say, I'm with you. I'm with you. Fantastic, Jeff. Let's go hard. They didn't do that, did they?
No, it was like the sound of one hand clapping, Chris, pretty much. So there weren't a lot of volunteers. There were a couple. I did have a couple of guys with me who couldn't stomach it either. But yes, but I think, again, that silent majority, the funny thing was it merged gradually over time. But yes, they were cheering us on because they go, no, we've had enough of this. This is just beyond the pale. So we gathered. Eventually the passive majority swung around behind us and they were pretty disgruntled. Not that they did anything about it, but they were at least disgruntled.
So you're say someone's listening right now, someone's watching and thinking to themselves, gee, I tell you what I could tell these authorities about what I have seen where I work and they have contemplated becoming a whistleblower, what would you say to them?
Don't do it.
Not
with Mark Dreyfus as Attorney General. I mean, he is an absolute disgrace. He's completely dropped the ball on whistleblower reform. He's not even trying. I mean, he promised a whistleblower protection agency 5 years ago, and he's just a couple of months ago called, mainly as a distraction from the David McBride case, announced when David McBride was actually in court. It's so blatant. He's announced another consultation process about this whistleblower protection agency. Well, you shouldn't have promised it 5 years ago if you needed to do consultation. But it's just deception. And they've had 5 years. They've been in government for 2 years and they've done nothing except organise another talk fest. So I wouldn't trust him to protect me. And in fact, other whistleblowers, the current experience is just a disaster. I mean, whistleblowers are getting smashed in the courts where his protections are useless. Actually, they're worse than useless because they give people the illusion that they can actually go to court and win, which they can't. And then there's the extreme case where Dreyfus himself is responsible for the prosecutions of McBride and Boyle. How could anybody take him seriously as a champion of whistleblowers when he's actually prosecuting two of them?
Yeah.
So
well explained, and it's probably very, very timely advice to those who might be considering all of this. Do not do it. Certainly do not do it now. Good to have you on the program, Jeff. No doubt we'll cross each other's paths on another radio or television program. I look forward to that. And on behalf of all the people who don't get ripped off like the others did, thank you very much for your intervention.
Thanks, Chris. Cheers.
Good on you. Jeff Morris is his name, OAM. Jeff really, really knows what he's talking about, and maybe this is the advice that you need to heed. Do not do it. Do not blow up your life for the sake of the principle, because you're not going to be supported by a government that comes after whistleblowers as they're doing with David McBride. We've got to take a break, got to get some news for you, and then after that I'll get to Dr. Alan Moran. This is Chris Smith on TNT.
Okay, everybody listen up.
Big news. Big news.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. A hailstorm has wiped out a solar farm in Texas, highlighting the perils of swapping traditional power sources for vulnerable green alternatives. Police are investigating the motive behind a mass stabbing in the United States, and there's outrage in Australia after it was revealed a women's soccer team who dominated an all-women's tournament in Sydney, winning every game they played, only did so because they had five biological males on their side.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Thank you so much for all the people who have been sending me little notes, both on my social media platforms, but also just on the chat box and also on email, just wishing me a happy Easter. I'm going to enjoy my Easter, but I am on air tomorrow, Good Friday, am on air Easter Monday. So looking forward to having your company then. So you won't go without your TNT, but you have a fabulous Easter as well. I hope you do with family, most importantly. So the Prime Minister of Australia has made, I think, the most childish comparison I've heard from him today, trying to talk up the potential of a solar panel factory in the Hunter Valley while demonising the coal-fired power station it's replacing. It's chalk and cheese, isn't it? He said there will be more jobs in the solar panel factory than the jobs which exist in the Liddell power station. But of course, the question is, do those jobs in the solar panel factory produce anything efficient? Well, the answer is no, because they'll be propped up by grants and subsidies. To look at today's evangelistic renewable announcement in the Hunter by the Prime Minister and his Climate Change Minister, I'm joined now by Dr. Alan Moran. Alan is the Principal of Regulation Economics. He's a noted economist who analyzes from a free market perspective. He was the Director of the Deregulation Unit at the Institute of Public Affairs and a senior official in Australia's Productivity Commission. He had made the climate change push towards net zero his prime focus of late. As a matter of fact, he has an article in this week's edition of The Spectator talking about the impossibility of the net zero agenda. We'll discuss that with him as well. Dr. Alan Moran, welcome back to TNT.
Hi, Chris. Great to be here.
Now, you've obviously seen a little bit, read a little bit, been apprised of what's been going on in the Hunter Valley today. He says he's got $1 billion in his skyrocket in his pocket to give and spike the solar panel manufacturing sector. It is a small sector, but he wants to spike it with $1 billion. I didn't know that manufacturing was on the way back, Alan, and that we now could compete with Asian wages.
Well, it's a terrific thought bubble, isn't it? You can imagine he's got his hand in his pocket, but his other hand is in our pockets to spend $1 billion and to splurge it. Hopefully, it'll be just on pure waste. But the problem with splurging it on energy is not only pure waste; it actually does destroy the energy system by forcing out useful stuff and replacing it by useless stuff. There's three things I think I'd like to say about this particular proposal. It seems like every 10 years such a proposal comes up. There was a blade factory in Victoria, again in an area where they were closing down power stations.
So this is a wind turbine blades,
yeah.
Right.
It lasted about 6 months before it went bankrupt, and a lot of government money, state and federal, was poured into it. But secondly, and it's really, as you said before, it's all very well saying we can create jobs. We can create millions of jobs if we want to. We can abolish all our generation systems, have a million people on bikes pedaling them and create their electricity this way. But, that's not efficient. It's got to be efficient. Otherwise, you're just wasting money. And certainly in terms of the solar area, it's massively inefficient. And for that reason, we have seen with the government forcing, subsidising solar and subsidising wind, forcing out coal and gas to some degree out of the system. So solar and wind are now 30% plus. And this is intermittent energy and very inefficient, very high cost. And the results are obvious. We've seen the prices of electricity go up. We've all seen that happen. We've seen the reliability increasingly threatened, and we've transformed what was only 20 years ago probably the most efficient electricity industry in the whole world, the lowest cost, into one of the highest cost. And that's done by government. It's not just Labour. Labour's worse than the Liberals, but the Liberals have been on that cart too. Labour has turbocharged it in the last 2 or 3 years, and they've increased the amount of subsidies. The subsidies, and they don't really tell you what the total quantum is, but the total quantum is now at about $15 or $16 billion every year. That's subsidies to wind and solar.
$16 billion
per year, every year. And that's for the solar and for the transmission lines and for various other aspects of solar and wind. Basically, and this has caused these two sources of energy to go from zero to about 30 or 33% over the last 20 years. And it's displaced coal. And the coal that remains is basically being forced to operate inefficiently. It's got to be stop start. It's got to actually cater for the wind and the solar when it comes in, and when it goes out, it's intermittent. So you know, we have this colossal situation which has taken place over recent years, the last two decades. It's just getting worse and worse. You mentioned an article I wrote in The Spectator, which was addressing this sort of issue. And not only quantifying it, but noting that there's a little bit of concern suddenly coming through from the point of view of the energy and the energy businesses, who've been they've been earning these subsidies, so they've been a bit quiet. And they're still actually a bit quiet, but the AGLs etc. of this world are now saying, well, you know, this is going a bit too fast, and we're putting at risk the entire system.
And yet, you mentioned AGL. I noticed in the Australian Financial Review this morning that the AGL company has announced that they are interested in making solar panels, Alan.
Well, of course they are. If you give them money, they will do. I mean, this is the whole point. If they're interested in making solar panels, why don't they go and make them? But they're not interested in making the solar panels unless somebody's got their hands in our pockets, giving it to them to make them. They wouldn't make them otherwise. They turn up to the photo shot from the with a lot of people there, all saying, all standing around thinking, what a great idea. Why hasn't anybody thought of this before? And they'll go, and AGL and anybody else will go along with it. And they'll build a factory, okay, if they get enough money, but they won't do it commercially, I can assure you of that.
And that's what you have written in The Spectator. You've said, we've got to remove all subsidies. We've got to defund many government agencies that were set up under Gillard Rudd. The CSIRO used to claim that half its programs were global warming oriented. We've got to put requirements on banks, financial houses and superannuation funds to cease discriminatory energy policies. We've discussed this before. We've got to reform planning laws that embrace climate change in evaluating development proposals. And we've got to have the use of the State Grants Commission to prevent state governments from using climate and other environmental policies to penalise productive activities. The chances of all of that happening, despite the compelling evidence, is two chances, Nunn and Buckley's, right?
The chances of it happening, unfortunately, at this stage is Nunn and Buckley's. But, you know, if it doesn't happen, the situation will get worse and worse. Our power prices will go up. Our competitiveness as a nation, an exporting nation and an import competing nation, will diminish. Our living standards will fall. Now, the nightmare is that could just go on and on for decades. The possibility, though, is that there will be a crisis occur, and people will suddenly start looking and thinking, well, you know, how come this did happen? They will start listening to people like you and to others in the media who are minority voices at the present time, who've been saying, you know, wait a minute, we're spending all this money on subsidies, we've wrecked what was a very efficient industry, we've got to turn back. And when people feel the pinch, hopefully that will occur. And hopefully will occur fairly soon. But you know, the agenda you wrote, you suggested there is, I think, is what needs to be done. We have to make sure our government acts in our interests and not against our interests. And we have to make sure that they don't canalize our money into people who will then portray them as being a godsend and helpful to the economy, and canalizing our money to people who were subsidized to say they're good. Really, we we need to do this, we need to do it quickly. It's crept up on us. It's been a gradual process over 20 years, and we're now hitting a crisis point.
Yeah, we sure are hitting a crisis point. Like, I'm thinking to myself, if you could actually see a goal, if you could actually see the try line in front of you, some kind of outcome, positive outcome to all of this spending, to the dismantling of very cheap power, you'd actually kind of understand it. But the end goal, Alan, is you achieve nothing. We know that from the former chief scientist when he said before a Senate committee, even if we shut down CO2 emissions that man made totally in Australia, we would make an infinitesimal difference to the temperature of the planet. In other words, so that people fully understand what's going on here, no matter what we do, no matter how much money we spend, no matter how much poorer we get, we cannot make a difference to the temperature of the planet.
Not only us, I think, Chris, we're 1% of emissions. We make no difference at all. But even the whole of the developed world, the US, Europe, Japan, etc., they're only 25% of emissions. Basically, all the emissions now are from China and India and Indonesia and elsewhere, these developing countries, which are taking over the world's industry because they've got cheap energy. It's not just that they've got cheap labor, they've got cheap energy, and they're displacing all our industries and becoming rich, and we're becoming more and more poorer as a result. We can't stop that process. The process is in, and as you suggest, it's a trivial effect we have, but really it's a trivial effect anyway that the greenhouse effect has. We see a one degree centigrade increase in average temperatures globally. It makes no difference whatsoever. And certainly there's nothing we can do to prevent it happening. So we really have to, we cannot sacrifice our nation to a lost cause like that.
Exactly. We can't sacrifice our nation to a lost cause. That is beautifully stated. You know, Bjorn Lomborg, the environmental economist I've spoken to many, many times, and he always says we should be putting our money not into shutting down coal-fired power stations, but into research and development, because one day there'll be a technology we're not aware of right now that will convert CO2 into whatever to protect the environment. If, of course, you believe that CO2 is warming the planet, and that is still debatable. He says, for instance, we will learn how to turn CO2 into fuel. Well, funnily enough, in the middle of last week, I found a story out of China where New Zealand and Chinese researchers, after many years of trying, had established the idea that you can turn CO2 into fuel. Mm. Now, these are the kinds of research and development programs we should be putting our money into, because that will be the path ahead, surely.
Well, it will be. I mean, and I don't know whether that particular technology is going to have wings in the end. It's very early stage. But the point about it is the Earth is quite a resilient system.
Yeah.
Humans are pretty resilient. That things change. Who would have thought that 500 years ago we would be burning anything other than wood and dung to heat our homes? I mean, the future may well be nuclear, and nuclear is low cost. It's relatively high cost for Australia, so we probably wouldn't go there. And indeed, we've got this whole rigmarole of regulatory agencies and regulatory issues around it in Australia, which nowhere else has got. But nuclear may well be the future. But the present time, we're sitting on fantastic resources in terms of coal. It's the cheapest coal in the world. It's cleanest. It's got no
carbon
monoxide or anything else, sulfurs in it. It's terrific coal, and we are deliberately turning our back. We are sabotaging this fantastic comparative advantage we have for no reason whatsoever, and it's a criminal act on the part of the politicians who are showing no leadership whatsoever, simply following on from the media agitation and giving people what they think they want.
I opened the program today with an editorial about this big announcement today, off the back of Anthony Albanese saying to the assembled press that, oh, there'll be more jobs in the solar factory that will be set up here when Liddell is closed down than there are in Liddell right now. And I thought that was the most childish comparison to make when you consider the fact that, well, those solar panels that will be produced won't be
part of the $66 billion that we get in revenue for exporting our coal, and yet that Liddell Coal Fire Station is part of that. The solar panel factory won't have any say in that. We'll lose that $66 billion. As a matter of fact, I think that revenue is being estimated in the next 2 years to total only $30 billion. So we're going down the trajectory of getting rid of all the money we need for hospitals and education, Alan.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and, you know, the if there are more jobs in that particular facility doing solar panels than Liddell, well, there probably won't be, because the facility won't last. It will only last while the government pours taxpayers' money into it. That's no way to run an economy. And this is the sad point about it. We have people running the economy, the politicians running the economy, who think the money just grows on air, who think that, you know, the entrepreneurs who've looked at things and have decided that they can't make any money out of a solar factory or God knows what, they themselves, the politicians, know how to do it better, and they will use our money to prove that they can do it, and all they will do is prove that they're wrong, which they do time after time after time.
Yeah, we've seen it before. Have a look at the Australian Financial Review today. They've got a terrific story where they go through the previous attempts to do this, how they've all failed. Dr. Alan Moran, great to have you on the program. Thank you very much for your analysis.
Thanks, Chris.
The Principle of Regulation Economics, Dr. Alan Moran. You heard this. This is common sense. This is not the ravings of any extremism. We cannot achieve anything by doing what we're doing right now, and yet we're propping up an industry that we couldn't possibly be efficient at building, and we couldn't possibly be efficient at manufacturing. That's not where we're going. We're going the other way. But Anthony Albanese has your money. He's got $1 billion of your money, and he can make anything work. Watch this fall down. I reckon it'll be closed before he even gets out of office, although who knows. We're being led by clowns, total and utter evangelical clowns. I've got to take a break. We'll come back. I can take your calls too, by the way. I know I've been busy this program, but if you want to call in from Australia or New Zealand, the number 1-800-670-310. From the UK, 0330024-1026. And from the US or Canada, 1-888-201-6425. This is Chris Smith on TNT.
Sometimes a car comes along that changes everything, with innovations never thought possible and features that make you wonder, how did people survive without this? This is that time, and this is that car. This is the world's first VW. Equipped with transparent doors to eliminate reasonable suspicion, whatever that means. A 10-2 steering wheel that keeps hands visible at all times. We remove the glove box so there's no confusion about what the driver is reaching for. With a touch of a button, the ultrasonic biometric scanner displays the license and registration of the driver to ensure contactless exchange of information. With no trunk, nothing can be concealed, so therefore, there is nothing to search and seize. To ensure you'll never be mistaken for breaking the speed limit, we've installed limited edition airless tires. And we removed the engine because, honestly, why risk it? DWB, the first vehicle of its kind, where the safety feature is the car itself.
I'm Sandra, this is Jorge, and we were adopted in 2019. I remember when they first came to us, Michael was already a teenager. The whole cliche of, they're so lucky to have you guys, and it's the other way around. They have changed our family for the better. They chose to love us. They didn't have to. They chose us. Family.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Where the story goes, we follow. Chris Smith on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Yeah, good to have your company. When I finish here, I've still got another day to broadcast, of course, on Good Friday. Looking forward to your company, George Christensen, talking about a whole heap of things, including the digital ID bill, which was pushed through yesterday in the Parliament. Stack of other stuff on the program. So hopefully, even on your Good Friday, you can tune into TNT. But after the news, Sonia Poulton is on deck, coming to you out of the UK. Sonia, a very good morning to you.
A very good morning to you too, Chris.
What have you got on the program?
Oh, we are busy. We're going to be talking about the farmers' protests and the issues of trade. We're going to be talking about the fact that Boots will now be selling a £100 Pfizer mRNA jab. We'll also be talking about how the UK is being blamed for the Moscow terror attack, and we will be drilling down on the failures of smart meters.
Smart meters. Boy, oh boy. Hasn't that, we've had that big story in Australia too. People screaming about the lack of reliability you can place in smart meters.
I wouldn't trust them as far as I could throw them, Chris. I've been researching them for about 10 years and they are inherent with problems. I have stoically and steadfastly refused to have one, even when I've had actual people turn up outside my door and insist that they have a right to enter and install them. Not having it, absolutely not. And we're seeing all the multitude of problems, including the fact that we can have our energy controlled.
Yeah, exactly. Keep away from all of that stuff. It's good advice. Sonia, we'll be listening in. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Chris. Have a great Thursday.
Yeah, same to you. Thank you. Sonia Poulton on after I get off. After the news, of course, in about 5 minutes' time. Billionaire Lindsay Fox, what's he up to? Well, you may be the judge of that because Lindsay is a crafty, conniving man. You can't be as successful as he has in the trucking and logistics business without being strategic. Well, Lindsay Fox appears to be playing a dangerous game of chicken with a formidable and powerful foe, according to what the Sydney Morning Herald describes today. A collective of nine organisations, including the big banks, the big supermarkets, and Australia Post. But he's doing so from seemingly a weak negotiating position. Fox's ownership of Armaguard, this is what's behind the Armaguard thing. He knows he's being screwed by the big banks who want to take away your cash, you see. So Lindsay Fox is on your side, even though it's only because he's greedy and he wants Armaguard to make $1 billion every year. But his ownership of Armaguard makes him the king of cash, kind of. The trouble is cash is going the way of the dodo, and Armaguard is a slow-motion train wreck that's ironically run out of money. And now it's collision time. And while the corporate undertakers may have been turned away, they must surely be on standby. So dire is Armaguard's financial position that supermarket giant Coles took a radical position this week, and we described that a little earlier in the program, politely turning away Fox's cash trucks in order that the supermarket chain can conserve the hard stuff over the next week, including Easter. And Coles has also imposed a cash-out limit of $200 for customers just in case. Coles didn't want its cash sitting inside Armaguard trucks. The group of nine organisations, which includes Coles, Woolworths, Wesfarmers, Australia Post, and the big four banks, and their umbrella organisation, the Australian Banking Association, had given Armaguard until 3 p.m. today to accept the bailout package of $26 million, after which it was due to lapse. But at the 11th hour, Fox refused the offer, deciding instead to use his own resources to ensure its cash transporting subsidiary had a pulse. So Lindsay has gone in and saved his own backside, that of Armaguard, without being at the beck and call of this group. I think it's an outstanding decision. If you can fork out that amount of money, why not? Coles immediately responded by resuming services with Armaguard. That's a good sign. The $10 million tied over funding provided by Fox is supposed to last until Armaguard can individually renegotiate contracts with these customers. Armaguard rejects the timing ultimatum by the Australian Banking Organisation. It said Armaguard continues to operate its full suite of services and is confident that over the coming months, it will get the business onto a long-term sustainable footing. Isn't it interesting? It's very complex, but this is the fight that we're having over cash. And Lindsay Fox, of all people,
is on the side of those who want to keep cash. That would be you and I. New South Wales police say a Chinese gang has been disrupted in Melbourne as four men were charged over an alleged money laundering syndicate. It's big money too. The alleged Melbourne-based gang is accused of using a money transfer business to move more than $39 million in illicit cash to China using a sophisticated network of associates between July and August 2022. This is when cash becomes a criminal commodity as well. Australian Federal Police started targeting the alleged syndicate in January last year, arresting four men after raids in Doncaster East, Box Hill and Melbourne's CBD. Designer watches, electronic devices, replica firearms and more than $212,000 was allegedly seized during the search. But big money, $39 million cash ripoff, a fraud that hopefully the police have got all the evidence they need to take down. I've got to get out of here. As I say, Sonia Poulton is next. We'll do it one more time this week on Good Friday. Looking forward to your company. This is Chris Smith on TNT.